Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we look at Spectre and Meltdown and their impact on performance. We bring Hardware Asylum to 2018 with a State of the Asylum address. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McGee.
Dennis, I have to tell you, I'm a little alarmed. I have been reading the tech news this week, and it turns out that I might be exploited, Dennis. I might have a problem because I am running a Microsoft operating system on an Intel chipset, and I am infected with Spectre or Meltdown or both. I don't even know.
I think both, to be honest. Really?
That's not good news.
No, it's not.
So I'm hearing that my system could be exploited. In fact, the patch may not even be available yet. And not only that, Dennis, but if what I'm hearing is correctly, when I do get patched, they're going to neuter my processor, Dennis, and I might actually lose up to 33% of my speed. That's what I'm hearing.
I think you're correct. Now, I have to ask.
That can't be right.
I know, but I have to ask. Have you scanned for rootkits lately?
Well, yeah, of course. I try to keep my virus protection and my firewall up to date because I sometimes hit that gray part of the web.
Well, yeah, I think we all do every once in a while. And the important thing here is antivirus and anti-malware, that's designed to protect you from things that would exploit anything on your system and any sort of vulnerability like in your browser or in your programs that you happen to be running.
But I'm hearing even Chrome could be affected by this thing and Firefox and all these things that we thought would keep us safe.
Yeah. And the difference here is that malware or anti-malware and antivirus software is designed to protect the, not necessarily the operating system, but the applications that you're using, like your browser and QuickBooks and those sorts of applications, right?
Well, yeah, and common sense, of course. I mean, you just can't click everything. I get that. But this one, I'm told, is a hardware vulnerability. Like, there's nothing I can do.
Well, no, because it starts at the hardware, and that is where the operating system lives. So Spectre and Meltdown, which is what you're talking about.
Right, right.
Those impact the software kernel. The actual operating system that runs on your computer. And it's not necessarily Windows. It can be a Mac. It can also be Linux. But they're exploiting availabilities inside the Intel chips and also AMD chips to speed up your system.
Well, this is not good news, Dennis, because that means that this is a fundamental flaw in the way the hardware is built. So there's really nothing I can do?
Nope.
All right, Dennis. So talk me through this. How will I know if I could be affected by one of these exploits? Meltdown and Spectre, they always have such clever names.
I did a little bit of Googling because, you know, some of this stuff is new to me as well. I hear the rumors and I know what happens, but I don't know exactly why. So I looked to PCWorld.com and they have an awesome, awesome article. I'll link it down in the show notes. It's titled Meltdown and Spectre FAQ. Fix your Intel CPU flaws could slow down PCs and Macs.
Okay, well, that makes me feel like at least it's a little bit isolated to Intel processors, which isn't great news because we're huge Intel fans these days.
Yeah, well, Intel is probably the largest share of it, partially because, you know, AMD was out of the market for a while.
Right.
So Intel really has the largest market share, and they've also been the performance leader. So they really have the largest market penetration in terms of processors and stuff.
Oh, my, look at the little evil icon. I mean, can they make it any cuter in its evilness?
Yeah, I don't know where this came from. That's
is
pretty.
Is that the Spectre?
Yeah, there's a little Spectre. It's a ghost with a stick, and then
he will smack you with that stick.
Yeah, and then there's also a shield that's also melting. It's pretty
darn cool. That must be the Meltdown. See now, how can you not love a virus with a cute icon? Right? Am I kidding? Come on, guys. So, all right, let's talk through it. So we've got two different exploits that we're talking about. Both of these affect. Well, what do they affect?
They affect the protected memory space between the kernel and system memory, for the most part. So give it to me straight. What is the issue here? Again, the CPU exploits in play here are extremely technical, but in a nutshell, the chip's kernel is leaking memory because of how it handles speculative execution. And this is something that Intel and AMD have built into their CPUs to help speed up and make the system more efficient by looking to see what is going to be happening versus what is currently happening. Your program or your game or benchmark or whatever that is being loaded into system memory, your CPU is aware of that and can actually start to allocate memory chunks to start running those programs.
Okay, well, that's kind of clever, and I can see where you'd get a performance hit if that wasn't working correctly. Yep.
And they go on and say which modern processor performed increased performance, so on and so forth. Meltdown is a more serious exploit and is one of the operating systems are rushing to fix. It breaks the most fundamental isolation between user applications and the operating system. According to Google, this flaw most strongly affects Intel processors because of its aggressive way they handle speculative execution. They also say that there's a few ARM cores that are also susceptible.
Okay, so step back. I was pretty clear that this was affecting Intel processors, but that would lead me to believe that this could affect some other processors too, including some AMD processors.
Spectre affects AMD and ARM processors as well as Intel CPUs, which is something that we already talked about.
Right.
Which means mobile devices are also at risk.
Oh, wait, Spectre affects phones and tablets too. Holy crap.
Let's see. It is harder to exploit than Meltdown, but it is also harder to mitigate, Google says. There may be no hardware solution to Spectre, which tricks applications into accessing arbitrary locations in their memory. Software needs to be hardened to guard against this.
Wow.
You know, I'm a bit of a programmer, so I kind of know how code works. And one of the fundamental things that was always beaten into me was you need to guard against like cross-site scripting, or you need to protect against SQL injection. As a programmer, you need to build that into your software to make them more secure.
Wow, now that's scary stuff, but basically, again, we're back to the point where we already have the hardware. The software has to catch up. And we've talked a lot about the hardware versus software, you know, aspect of the market and the fact that the hardware is so much further ahead than the software these days. And so I guess kind of makes sense that we're still finding issues with the way that the software works. Now, what's scary to me is what chips are affected. Now, you had mentioned off the air, I think, that this goes back to 1995, is that what you're saying?
You know, PC World says in one of their FAQs, how do I know if my PC is at risk?
You turn it on?
Basically, Google says, effectively, every Intel processor released since 1995 is vulnerable to Meltdown, regardless of the OS you're running or whether you have a desktop or a laptop, so on and so forth. 1995, that's a long time. So I went out to the Intel site and said, hey, what kind of CPUs were released in 1995? And, you know, I had a couple of these.
Is that back when Intel was still carving their name in rocks? I mean, that just seems like forever ago.
It is forever ago. So I'm going to scroll down here to 1995, right?
Okay.
I highlighted one of these. November 1st, 1995. What processor is this?
Oh, my gosh. The Intel Pentium Pro processor, all the way back to the 150 megahertz processor. It's almost hard to believe that processors were like that in 1995. I mean, I guess that's almost a lifetime ago for some of our listeners.
Well, if we stay within the Pentium Pro family and we scroll up, okay, the next one we have Pentium processor. We're not going to count that one.
Sure. The Pentium 2. Wow.
Pentium 2 was based off of Pentium Pro. And so the architecture is the same. So Pentium 2 is going to be following the same path and probably have the same issues.
Right.
And then we have a couple more Pentium Pros that were released later. Admittedly, Pentium Pro was mostly for workstation systems. They were not really priced accordingly to consumers and gamers and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, but then we got some mobiles.
Yeah, some mobiles there.
Mobile 2s. Oh, the Celeron, the old Celery. Of course, we always knew that that was going to be, you know, the one to not have. And this just...
Well, and the Celeron processor was based not necessarily on the Pentium Pro architecture, but the old Pentium architecture just to make it a little bit cheaper.
Sure. The Xenons. Wow. Even Xenon. They're not safe.
Yeah. Xenons were the workstation server-based processors, but based on Pentium True architecture.
Right.
We scroll on up here to...
More Celerys. More Pentium 3.
Pentium 3. Now, this was the first mainstream CPU that... started as a slot processor where we had a separated level 3 cache and then started going to a socket processor, what we saw with Coppermine, where they started integrating the level 3 cache. We're getting into a little bit of processor architecture here, but you can see how the progression went all the way back to a certain architecture and can be brought forward as an exploit.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more crazy. So we got more Celerons, more Pentiums. And then, of course, into the modern processors here, as we start to hit the 2000s, you're going to start to see Pentium 4s.
Yeah, Pentium 4 and 2000.
And at this point,
if that's still not, 18 years ago.
I know, but the point is that this is when Intel started to take market share away from AMD, when AMD stopped being a major factor and started to fade away to more entry-level processors, mm-hmm. which means that really, unless your machine is pretty dang ancient, at this point, if you're listening to this podcast, the odds are really good that you're on an Intel processor or an AMD Ryzen processor, maybe. Yeah,
definitely with a Ryzen. And this problem really affects Ryzen as well because it's operating system based. And that is where if you're running Windows 10, you're probably going to get a patch right away. Windows 7, you'll probably get a patch. Windows XP, no, not so much. On the Linux operating systems, all you have to do is just basically install a new kernel and you should be good to go.
Now, this is kind of interesting to me because the hardware isn't able to be patched, of course, for the vulnerabilities, which means that we'll have to wait for next generation processors to see if AMD or Intel address this at the hardware level. But in the short run, you're really dependent on the software, which means that you really need to take a close look at what you're running. Mm-hmm. And this is when Intel sunsetting operating systems really starts to have an impact, because if you're not running Windows 7 or Windows 10, you're not supported.
Nope,
and if you're running an older browser, which also makes use of these memory exploits, let's say Safari, for example, or mm-hmm. Firefox or any of these, then you need to make sure you're current to get the vulnerability patch so that you're not vulnerable to web exploits also, if I'm not mistaken.
We get into one of the FAQs on PC World here. It says, how much slower will my PC or Mac become?
Now, this is the question that really crosses my mind, because if this speculative functionality is what's driving the performance, especially in Intel processors, if they take it away, how neutered am I talking about? Because, I mean, 33% is what I heard, which is a third of your performance is lost. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing amount of performance, and I know that that's probably speculative, so give it to me. How bad really is it?
Well, they basically say it's complicated. Fortunately, a growing number of tests seem to support Intel contention that everyday PC users will not see a dramatic slowdown, although there's one particular area of concern, drive read performance.
Oh, because, you know, that's not important or anything. I like that it's complicated, like you're dating Intel and they've changed their stance.
Yeah, exactly.
It's complicated.
Yeah, so if we know something about the way that the kernel contacts the system memory, it's doing that as part of an I/O read. And I/O is basically input output.
Right.
And that's going to primarily be talking to the system memory. What is the expanded system memory? Hard drives.
Sure, yeah, because caching, essentially.
Yeah, and then basically the output of that is also to video cards and network cards and stuff like that. But the primary driver for the CPU is to get stuff from memory. And if it can't see it in system memory, it's going to grab it from long-term storage, which is your hard drive.
All right, so two questions. One, are we screwed for benchmarking? Should we be rushing to get benchmarks out before the patch is available? And two, is my Battlefield going to be affected?
Well, let's see if they have addressed that in this article. Let's see. Scanning down here, we see, something about the Core i7-8700K.
Oh, that's pretty darn close to what I'm running.
Yeah, let's see. It includes, we're talking about a Linux kernel here.
Oh, well, those guys are weird. They don't count. Come on.
Yeah. The Core i7-8700K saw a massive performance decrease in FS Mark 3.3 and CompileBench, a pair of synthetic I/O benchmarks.
Okay, so I/O, that's the read, right? Okay.
Yeah. Now, here's the big one. PostgreSQL and Rias suffered a loss, but to a lesser degree. Finally, H.264 video encoding, time Linux kernel compilation, and MPEG video conversion task didn't lose anything.
All right, so I'm seeing mixed responses for our overclocking and benchmarking software, but yeah, mostly positive, I guess.
Yeah, basically this last paragraph was saying that PostgreSQL slowed down because it's a database, it's going to be in long-term storage. But when we have something that's running primarily at the CPU level, which is our video encoding and also video encoding here. Basically, they didn't lose anything because it's all within the CPU and the memory space right there. So, hey, here we go. Will my games get slower?
All right, let's talk about it because, you know, benchmarks are one thing, but come on, games is where you really want your performance to stay. Well, and some of our heavy crunching applications like your photo and video manipulation stuff.
Right. So they basically say probably not. Phronix, which is actually a hardware review site dedicated to Linux-based hardware. Also tested Dota 2, Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, Dawn of War, F1 2017, and the Talos Principle on the latest Linux kernel, and they saw none of a drop in frame rate.
Oh, nice, nice, okay.
And then they see, let's see, Hardware Unboxed, which is another hardware review site, went and tested some Windows stuff. Fortunately, they observed virtually no frame rate loss in Ashes of Singularity, which is a huge DirectX 12 benchmark. Nice. Assassin's Creed Origins, which is a game that has gotten a lot of bad press because of performance problems. And Battlefield 1, they said that there was no
woohoo
loss.
All right. Well, in that case, not as bad as I thought. So, and now let's talk about AMD, I guess. I see.
Yeah. Are AMD processors affected? Much, much less than Intel chips. All modern CPUs are vulnerable to Spectre attacks, but AMD says that its CPUs have near zero risk to the variant due to the way that they are constructed.
Oh, so for once AMD's ahead of the curve, at least, their new hardware redesign.
Yeah, it still impacts it. However, they're going also in saying that, you know, we're going to be issuing a patch to the kernel in the operating systems, and that's going to be fixing any sort of problem that was with an AMD CPU to begin with.
Well, I like where they're going with this, but they do make a very interesting point, and it's the same point I would make. If Intel's going to lose performance, and it could be double digits, and now the 33% maybe is a little bit of cry wolf, but it can be up to double digit performance depending on how your software is using those memory calls and how that speculative draw is working.
The one thing that we hadn't really discussed, you know, because this article is written for consumers, you know, retail customers. What about enterprise? We have enterprise systems, servers, file servers, database servers. Those all deal with I/O all the time. We have a problem with the CPU that is all over in the data center space. And that's somewhere that AMD has not been in a really long time. So Basically, every server in every data center is probably Intel-based. Once they issue that patch to that OS, how much slower is that going to make the enterprise space? And that's really, I think, where the biggest hit is going to be. And that's where those double-digit sort of performance decreases are really going to be affecting the bottom line.
So I think if I've learned nothing else from this description, that is, make sure your software is up to date and be looking for those patches if they're not available by the time you hear this from not only Windows and other OS manufacturers, but especially your browsers themselves. Make sure everything's current. And that's good advice all the time because your virus protection, your firewall protection may not necessarily be the solution for these two exploits, Meltdown and Spectre. So folks, if you are listening to this out there, keep in mind the fix may already be there. And like me, you're just going to have to live with the fact that you might lose a little bit of your performance short term. Stay up to date and keep your eyes out for more updates on Meltdown and Spectre.
Those of you listening to this podcast will have realized that it is a new year.
Dun, dun, dun.
2018. 2017 is behind us. And it was a great year for Hardware Asylum for about half of it.
Oh, no. It was a great year in general, I think. But do tell. Do tell.
Well, on the website, on hardwareasylum.com, I will be posting the State of the Asylum address.
It is that time of the year.
And it's something that I started back in the days of Ninja Lane, where I would just kind of talk about some of the successes and what I had planned for the future and really kind of elicit some commentation from my readers.
Yeah, it's your chance to give a little feedback and help us steer the site as we go into the new year. And I know not every site gives this opportunity, so feel free to listen to us here, check out the article, and definitely help us out with what you want. But with that in mind, let's talk about the state of the Hardware Asylum.
Yeah, well, we can start with some of these successes, right?
All right.
I want to say I launched a couple of YouTube videos.
Oh, yeah.
One of them actually took off and had people watch it. I'm like, wow, really? Serious?
Longtime listeners will know that I've been prodding Dennis to release more video and interactive content for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's just difficult to break that market. I mean, there's so many different ways that people consume their media. And we've been very focused on our current formula, which has worked well for us.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's the only way that we should be delivering content.
No, definitely. Especially with the way that people consume media these days. Not many people go to sites to read about reviews. Most of the people that look at reviews are curious about a product, and that's whatever shows up in the search engine, or they like the site and they want to see what new article got posted. But those are the people that really have time to sit down and actually flip through and look at pictures. A lot of people really consume the multimedia style content, people listening to the podcast, by the way, and videos.
So Dennis, I know that you've made a substantial investment in moving in this direction. So why don't we give folks a little sneak preview of what we've got going?
Well, let's see. I got studio lights. I got a 4K video camera for Christmas, believe it or not.
Woohoo!
Yeah, bought it for myself. We also have some lapel microphones that were used to create the previous videos. The problem that we had, though, was lighting. And despite the expensive and much bulbage. That's really the right way to say it, but the multi-bulb studio lights that I bought, the camera that I had really just didn't work very well. So hopefully the new camera will help that, and in conjunction with everything else I bought, we will have properly lit videos and maybe a charismatic person behind the camera.
Well, it's something that we can both learn and grow with, and with a little help from our viewers, I guess we would say. We'll continue to improve on that and try to provide the content that you folks are interested in that new format video. And we'll be releasing these videos in what formats? What, where will we go to look for these things?
YouTube.com/hardwareasylum. And also repost it on hardwareasylum.com.
Woohoo! So something to look forward to. And I have to admit, I'm a little excited about the ability to do video, because it gives us a chance to show you, not just talk about some of the things we've been doing. Mm-hmm. And you won't be so dependent on the pictures. So I tend to like videos. Let's face it, these days, modern folks, what do you do when you don't know how to do something? You say, let's Google it, see if there's a video, right? So soon we'll be joining those ranks. But what else have you got for us, Dennis?
Well, let's see. One of my goals last year was to start doing more case modding.
Woohoo!
And while we did one major mod this year, I have a couple more planned for, or not this year, but last year. We had the Core X31, which was the personal build for Darren here.
Right, right.
Lots of RGB, some custom paint, and a couple of cuttings. And, you know, it turned out really quite well.
Well, we did the stealth build too, although that's a little bit of a different way of looking at things.
Yeah, and that was actually a YouTube video series. So that was combining two mediums together. Well, I want to continue modding. I like modding. That was actually what started Ninja Lane back in the day, long, long time ago. You know, I was putting fans in cases. You know, how do you do that? Well, I want to get into doing some more elaborate builds, not necessarily like custom off the shelf, you know, hanging from three wires off the top of a skyscraper sort of builds, but, you know, practical mods, you know, stuff that you can carry around to a LAN party, stuff that actually will resist a cat running into it and sneezing sideways and stuff like that. You know, something that you can use.
Well, and not only that, but it's become so easy to buy off-the-shelf mods. If you really want to differentiate yourself or get that added amount of performance, simple mods are really the way to go. And I'm not talking about just installing lights, although I like to do that too. Mm-hmm. We're talking about just little ways to get your machine performing and breathing better. So I'm looking forward to that, because that's going to look great in video too, especially at 4K.
Exactly. And the last major success I had, we sponsored the Boise LAN again, which is a local LAN party. I was able to give some product away to the people that attended the LAN party. We got to go play some games and show off the fancy X31 build and a couple of other custom machines I put together just so we could game.
This is something that I'm really proud of too, because I think that sites, especially some of the bigger sites, don't have an opportunity to give back to their community. I mean, it's pretty easy to offer a contest or post articles and try to get clicks for ads. But this is our great opportunity to grow our local scene and support the folks in our area. And you know what they say, they think globally, act locally, right? And this is our opportunity to kind of grow the sport and get some hands-on time with the folks that are our immediate community. And that doesn't mean that the folks that are listening or watching this aren't important to us too, but if we can't reach those folks that are new to the enthusiast community, new to overclocking, new to modding, and teach and grow them, then this really is going to become a niche dying sport, if you will. And we both have a very vested interest in getting folks excited about custom PCs, modding, and performance in the long run. Because if we don't, we'll all be buying Dells.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see, what do I have planned for 2018?
Yes.
The first thing on my list is the podcast. You know, it's growing, which is pretty awesome. It's not growing really into the realm of like Twit TV or anything like that, but it's steadily growing, and that's a success in my mind.
Well, and folks, to understand, this really is a labor of love for us. I mean, it's not heavily sponsored. We're not shoving advertising down your throat. We're just happy to have you with us, and we hope that you enjoy listening to us every month and share with your friends, folks, so we can continue to grow and keep doing this because, I mean, what else are we going to do for fun, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's see, next one, bring back the forums.
Oh, the forums.
Yeah, that's a question mark. You know, I get asked all the time about forums, and 10 years ago when I was running Ninja Lane, the forum was a big part, and I had a lot of people coming in, and that was really the community of the website. When I started Hardware Asylum, I got rid of the forum because a lot of people started moving to social media. The problem is you lose that community. And while I would love to bring a forum back and create a community, it's really an uphill battle.
Do folks even use forums anymore? I mean, it seems like folks are communicating through, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all these other mediums these days.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of sites that the forum is the website. You know, we have overclock.net. That's basically a forum. We have a couple of other modding sites that are forum-based. But again, and I mentioned this in the State of the Asylum address, people have their home forums, and it's really hard to get them away from there. So the challenge, not necessarily bring the forums back, but we need to create the community. And that's where, you know, the people listening to this that have a crazy idea, send it in.
Absolutely.
And see, YouTube, we already talked about this. You know,
YouTube.
I got a shiny new camera. I got to use it. I got to figure out how to get myself in front of the camera or get Darren in front of the camera and actually, you know, make it. I say I got a face for radio. That's just because I don't like getting my picture taken.
Well, we'll figure that out because I really believe that video is the future, even if it's just something simple. So look for us to be experimenting and growing in that arena as we move forward.
Yeah. The next one, case modding and overclocking. I mean, this is pretty self-explanatory. I like case modding. I love overclocking. Both of them require time and money. Unfortunately, you know, to be a competitive, not necessarily professional, but a competitive overclocker, it takes a lot of money. You know, you got to go buy those processors and you got to figure out how to unload them once you have them. You might get lucky with one processor and be able to run that through a bunch of benchmarks and get a few points, get some fame points there, but you might go through five of them and not get anything.
Well, I think even when we've talked about some of the vulnerabilities and the software hardware changes that are coming in the near future, it becomes really even more important to talk about how you can get that extra performance for your dollar out there. And I know that at the moment, hardware is kind of ahead of software. You probably can get a fantastic machine without having a cutting edge or overclocking machine. But that's not why we're here, Dennis. We want to push these things a little bit, do something outside of the box. So I'm really looking forward to seeing us do some extreme projects, talk a little bit more about overclocking in general, especially as we move into the new year.
Yeah, I have actually some really great ideas to combine overclocking, performance, and YouTube. So look for those later.
Woohoo!
Let's see. And the last thing that I have on my list is a new old theme where I really want to drive or try to drive or at least create some buzz around PC as a status symbol. I mean, when we were getting into the enthusiast PC market, we bragged a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what drove us to build our own PC was other people building their PCs and say, hey, yeah, I just got the latest GeForce 3. Check it out. That sort of interaction is what get people excited about putting a computer together and wanting to know, why do I pick this cooler over this cooler? Or why do I pick this hard drive over this hard drive? Or can I add five of them together? You know, that sort of stuff. That is really what drives the market and really builds the enthusiast PC space.
Well, I like to think that folks are becoming at least a little more cognizant of what's inside their computer, and maybe that's limited to the enthusiast market and the folks that are like you listening to this podcast. But I'm starting to hear trends of folks that don't just refer to their PC, but tend to refer to the pieces, parts in it. You know, I've got a 1060 SSC, or I'm in a Fantech or a Lianli case, for example, instead of just, I brought my computer. So I see that there's some potential here as folks become more educated, and we return really to what makes your computer individualistic and specific. And if you're listening to this, you are probably already aware of that and really probably more cognizant of what's in your PC than most listeners. Uh-huh. But the reality is if we're going to grow this market, then people need to know that there's a difference between an AMD and an Intel and know that there's an advantage to a 1080 over a 1050 or a 570 even. And that's a difficult thing to overcome when you don't have that mass cultural appeal out there, when there isn't a, you know, a Jay-Z or a Britney driving your technology. And that may change. We will see.
Yeah, well, maybe we could get Britney to endorse a custom dual loop sort of case mod for us.
One can dream. You know, there got to be celebrities out there that know about custom PCs and overclocking. We just got to find a way to get it out there.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2018. Thanks for listening. Meltdown is a more serious exploit. I'll back up 1 second here.
Okay, so
I'm going to cut this part.
Meltdown. It's like a Fast and the Furious movie joke, or like a Transformer name. I am Meltdown.